Zach sits on the edge of the bed watching Tallulah get ready to go to the pub.
This is fucking ridiculous, he says.
Can you stop watching me, please?
I mean, for fuck's sake, it's not as if these people would even notice if you didn't show up. They wouldn't even care.
How do you know?
Because people don't care. Everyone goes around thinking they're the centre of the fucking universe and that people miss them when they don't come to things, but nobody gives a shit.
So if you didn't turn up for football one Sunday, you think nobody would notice?
That's different. It's a team. You need a certain number for a team. You don't need a certain number to sit in the fucking pub.
Tallulah doesn't reply. She focuses instead on rearranging her earrings, changing the plain silver studs and hoops she normally wears for a fancy set of earrings that loop together on chains from the top of her ear down to the lobes. They're similar to the sorts of earrings that Scarlett wears.
What the hell is that?
She glances at Zach's reflection in the mirror witheringly, but doesn't respond. Aren't you going to give Noah his bath now? She says. It's getting late.
I'm pretty sure that you don't get to dictate our schedule since you're not even going to be here.
Tallulah rolls her eyes. I can't believe you're making such a fuss about me leaving the house.
It's not you leaving the house that's the issue. You leave the house all the fucking time. It's you spending money when we're trying to save up.
She turns and stares at him. I told you, she says. I don't want to move out. I don't want to buy a flat. I want to stay here.
Yeah, well, I'm not particularly interested in what you want or don't want. This isn't about you. It's about Noah.
Noah doesn't want to go and live in a box on the side of an A road either. He wants to stay here. It's lovely here. The countryside on our doorstep. There's the nursery just across the common. His nana, his uncle, your mum. There's a beat of silence. He narrows his eyes at her.
You know my mum doesn't even think Noah's mine.
Tallulah freezes.
She reckons you're just using me for money. And you know what? When I think about it, she's got a point. I mean, all those months when you didn't want me anywhere near you. All those months where you just kept me at arm's length.
You dumped me when I was pregnant, she interjects through bared teeth.
And why did you think that was?
I don't know, she says. You tell me.
Because I didn't believe you, did I? I didn't believe you were really pregnant. I thought you were just trying to trap me. Because we were so careful, and I knew we'd been careful, and I couldn't see how it could have happened. And then I started to think, all those times you said you were revising for your A-levels, all those times you were too busy to see me, I just thought, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you were off with someone else, and that's how you got pregnant. Because it can't have been me.
So you dumped me because you thought I was pregnant with somebody else's baby?
Yeah, basically.
Jesus Christ!
But then I saw you out and about with the baby and you looked so happy and so beautiful and the baby was just like the most beautiful baby I'd ever seen and I thought...
His voice starts to crack.
I thought, well, I wouldn't be feeling that way if it wasn't mine. I thought I'd know. I'd know. If he was someone else's. And every time I saw him, I just fell more and more in love with him. And even though he doesn't really look like me, I could just tell that he was mine. You know, like in here.
He bangs his chest with his fist.
Mine. And I think my mum's wrong. I mean, I know she's wrong. Because he is, isn't he? Noah is mine.
Zach's eyes are filled with tears. He looks desperate and pathetic. For a moment, Tallulah's heart fills with a kind of pitiful love for him, and she finds herself moving towards where he sits on the edge of the bed and putting her arms around his neck and whispering into his ear.
God, of course he's yours. Of course he is. He's yours, I promise he's yours.
And his arms reach round her and pull her tighter towards him, and she feels the wetness of his tears against her cheek. And he says,
please, Lules, please don't go out tonight. Please stay home. I'll go out and get us a bottle of wine and some Doritos. Just you and me. Please.
Tallulah thinks of Keziah and her weird little gang of local friends, all so alien to her with their barely begun lives and their safe little jobs, still waiting for boyfriends and babies, as if that was all there was to life. She thinks of them all staring at her like an exhibit at a zoo, talking about motherhood and cohabitation as if it was an end goal, rather than a place you might find yourself by accident. She pictures them sitting primly on the velvet sofas at the Swan and Ducks, sipping cheap Prosecco and laughing in high-pitched voices at things that aren't particularly funny. And then she thinks of drinking wine with Zach, of capitalising on this rare moment of softness after all these weeks of hard edges and cutting comments, of pulling Zach back from the brink, persuading him that he could move back to his mum's, that they could just co-parent, amicably, just as they'd done before he moved in. She thinks if they can be nice to each other tonight, maybe they can move on to a place where no one is angry and everyone gets what they want. And what they both want, more than anything, is Noah. And maybe Zach will learn to accept that this is enough and that he doesn't need Tallulah too, that he doesn't need a nuclear family, that there are other girls out there who will love him for what he is and not just put up with him for the sake of happy families. Girls who would want a future with him, who would want to have sex with him more than once a week. Girls who aren't into girls. So she nods her head against his face and says,
"Yes, let's do that. It'll be good. I'll send Keziah a text now. We can stay in. We can stay in."
Chapter 40, September 2018. The following morning, Sophie stays in bed while Sean gets up and ready for work. She has not slept well. She's nervous about the children coming tonight. Sean's ex, Pippa, is bringing them, and there'll be an awkward handover to deal with. She knows the twins will be fine. They are robust and uncomplicated children, mainly, she suspects, because they are twins. But she's still stressed about having to play mother for 2 nights and 2 days, having to focus on someone else after all these days of having her head in the mysterious disappearance of Tallulah and Zach. It's forecast to rain for the entire weekend, which means that all the lovely things she thought they might do together are not going to happen, and they'll be stuck indoors or having pub lunches across the common. But mainly, she has not slept because of her chilling encounter with Liam the previous day and the revelation of the passage in her own book. After he'd left, she'd spent some time on Instagram searching for him and finally found his account 20 down. His profile photo was a picture of his face, and his profile name was Boobs Bailey, which struck Sophie as very bizarre. He had very few posts, only about 20 or 30, but one had jumped out at Sophie, a photo taken in June 2017. It appeared to have been taken in the small courtyard garden at the back of the Swan and Ducks. Sophie recognised the big wrought iron clock that hangs on the wall out there. The photo was of Liam and Scarlett and Lexi. They all had their arms around each other, and Scarlett had her tongue out, a flash of silver piercing as it caught the sun. Underneath, Liam had written the word, "beauties." Liam and Lexi, it appeared, were friends. The post had 7 likes, and Sophie clicked it to see if any were from people she knew. One was from Kerri-Anne Mulligan, another from someone called Amelia Disperu. She clicked on this and brought up a page for a young girl with fine blonde hair and an elfin face. Her bio described her as skinny mini, lost in the middle of effing nowhere. Her feed consisted of a few strangely abstract shots of landscapes, and the last post was dated 16th of June, 2017. Sophie's heart had skipped a beat. A dark shimmer of underlit pool water, a hint of hot pink flamingo, a hand just out of shot cupped around a lit cigarette, the blurred outlines of figures behind huddled together under a throw. She clicked on the image and zoomed in on it, but it was impossible to tell who the people in the background were. The photo had no caption and no likes and no comments. It hung suspended there, like an empty thought bubble, without context or meaning. But it was, Sophie was sure of it, a tantalising fragment of the night Zach and Tallulah went missing.
She'd become distracted then by a flurry of activity in her inbox, always the way at that time of the day, as people who worked in offices tied up loose ends before leaving for home. And then Sean had returned. That night, in bed, her head had spun with disparate pieces of information, dissonant feelings about the key players and unanswered questions. She dreamed about the pool, about inflatable flamingos and weird metal levers, and Liam Bailey scribbling on her trainers with a pink highlighter pen and telling her that she needed to shave her legs. Now she sits in bed, scrolling through her phone, mindlessly. She has a food delivery coming at 10, lots of good healthy stuff for the twins, some wine, some treats, which the twins will look at in awe and wonder, as if they had never seen chocolate rice cakes before, and extra milk for all the cereal. Apart from that, her day is free. She should pack for Denmark. She's leaving first thing on Monday morning. She has a car coming to take her to Gatwick at 4:30 in the morning, and the children will be here until early evening on Sunday. She should use the day wisely and sensibly to clear her email inbox, get ready for her trip, and be relaxed for the children's arrival. But she can feel it inside her like a strange piece of music on repeat. The need to keep digging, both literally and metaphorically. She Googles Amelia Disperu. A girl called Mimi was the only other person at Dark Place that night, apart from Liam, Lexi, and Scarlett's mother. Like Scarlett and her family, Mimi has also erased her online presence. Disparu is French for disappeared. And Mimi, thinks Sophie, could be an abbreviation of Amelia. The search results bring up a YouTube account for someone called Mimi Malia. She clicks on it. Immediately, she sits bolt upright in bed. On screen is the same young woman with the fine blonde hair and elfin face. She appears to be in a bedroom. She adjusts the angle of the camera she's using to record herself and then says, "Hi guys, welcome to my channel. My name is Amelia, or Mimi, or anything you like really, at this point, who really cares? I was going to talk to you all today about my struggles with celiac disease, but as some of you know, I have had another struggle in my life for the past year, 15 months. Post-traumatic stress caused by an incident last summer that I have hitherto not spoken about in order to protect someone very close to me. But I have recently discovered that that person is not the person I thought they were. And..." She pauses then, and her gaze leaves the camera and hovers somewhere towards the bottom of the screen. She's wearing a white vest top, and her arms are very pale and thin. Her eyes come back to the camera. "Well," she begins, "I can't say too much. In fact, I can't say anything, but..." She pauses for dramatic effect. "The thing that cannot be named looks like it might finally, finally, finally..." She crosses two pairs of fingers. "Be about to spill its guts. And just you wait until it does." She makes her hands into two fists, side by side, and then explodes them. "Pew," she says. "Pew." Then it ends, and Sophie sits dumbstruck, her jaw hanging slightly. She watches it again. The date on the video is yesterday's date. Sophie has no idea if this is the girl called Mimi who was there the night that Zach and Tallulah disappeared. But this girl once liked a photo of Liam and Lexi and Scarlett taken at the Swan and Ducks, and now she is discussing an event that happened over a year ago, that she has not been allowed to discuss, but that has left her with PTSD. Sophie puts down her phone, jumps out of bed, and gets in the shower. 20 minutes later, she is outside Kim Knox's house. Kim comes to the door holding a mascara tube in one hand and the wand in the other. Behind her, Sophie can hear Kim's grandson shouting about something. Kim closes her eyes, turns her head and sighs before opening them again and staring straight at Sophie. "Oh," she says, "sorry, I thought it was going to be an Amazon delivery. Sorry to disturb you so early, Kim. I can see you're busy, but I just wanted to show you something, quickly, if you've got a minute." "Yeah, sure, come in. Sorry, it's all a bit chaotic. You know, mornings. Do you have kids?
No,
Sophie replies. No, well, stepkids, sort of. Not technically, but just about. They're coming to stay this weekend, so I guess I'll be the one in chaos then.
Kim's house is lovely, painted in soft shades of grey and teal and oyster shell pink, with splashes of mad wallpaper with birds of paradise printed on them, and copper shaded lights. But it's a mess. The floor is littered with shoes and toys and empty cardboard boxes. The TV blares from the living room, and the boy is shouting even louder. In the kitchen, he sits on an aqua blue chair at a white formica-topped table, eating cereal with a plastic spoon.
Come on, Noah, you need to finish up now. We have to leave in 10 minutes.
No!
He shouts.
No, nursery.
He throws his plastic spoon down onto the table where it splatters milk everywhere. Kim grabs a damp cloth from the sink and wipes up the spills, before removing the boy's cereal bowl and carrying it towards the dishwasher.
No!
The boy yells.
No, give it back!
Okay, says Kim, but you have to promise to eat it up nice and fast, okay?
He nods solemnly, and she replaces the bowl in front of him, whereupon he slides it slowly and deliberately across the table until it is nearly hanging off the edge. Kim grabs it just before it falls, whisks it away from him and says,
Sorry, that's your last chance. Now you need to finish your juice and we need to get ready to go.
No,
he shouts.
Not going.
I can come back later if you'd rather, says Sophie. Kim sighs.
Can you just tell me what it is?
I was just looking through the social media, Sophie begins hesitantly, for all the kids who were at Dark Place that night, and I found a YouTube channel for a girl. She's called Amelia, but she shortens it to Mimi, and I wondered if maybe it was her.
Mimi? Mimi Rhodes?
Yes, and this girl, she just posted something yesterday. Something very strange. I wanted you to see it so you could tell me if it's her or not. If it's Mimi.
Tell you what, says Kim. Let me just corral this one and I'll meet you on the street. We can walk to the nursery together if you have time.
Yes, I have time. I have loads of time. I'll see you in a minute.
She leaves the house, the sound of Kim's grandson's furious tantrum still ringing in her ears. She waits by the edge of the common for a few minutes, and then finally Kim appears, her hair in a haphazard bun on top of her head, black-framed glasses on and no makeup, pushing the crying boy in his buggy. He's quietening down now, and Sophie glances at him, and then at Kim, and says,
Everything okay?
Kim nods. Yes, we got there in the end. We have a reward chart, don't we, Noah? And what do we get if we get up to the top level of the rainbow?
Legoland!
Yes, we get to go to Legoland. And how far up the ladder are we?
Half.
Yes, we're halfway, so we just need to keep trying to be good, particularly in the mornings, so we're not late for nursery, yes?
Yes.
He nods.
Yes, then Legoland.
They're halfway across the common, about to circle the duck pond. Sophie turns on her phone and sets the video to full screen, turns it on its side, and they watch it as they walk. Is that her? Is that Mimi Rhodes?
God, I'm not 100% sure. I only saw her a couple of times at the police station, and she had red hair then, I think. Not blonde, but yes, it does sort of look like her.
Missy?
Asks Noah.
She sighs and says to Sophie, Do you mind? He always has to see everything, everything.
Sophie passes the phone to Noah. He grabs it and stares at the girl.
Looks sad,
says Noah.
Like sad person.
Yes, probably, says Kim. She probably is.
A moment later, they are outside the tiny primary school, which sits down a small lane around the back of the Swan and Ducks. Small children in grey and blue swarm past and into the gates, and Sophie feels her senses twitch with echoes of her own time as a classroom assistant. Opposite the main gates is a small prefab building surrounded by its own picket fence. This is the nursery. They see Noah through the door into the care of a young girl with a bright smile, and then they turn to each other.
"Shall we get a coffee?"
asks Kim. "At the Ducks?"
"Sure."
Once seated, they watch the video together in its entirety.
"Well,"
says Kim,
"I can't see how this could not be her. Can you send me the link so I can send it to the detective in charge of the case?"
"Sure, let me have your number." She sends the link to Kim via WhatsApp, and they wait for it to land in her inbox before putting down their phones.
"So you're interested in the case then?"
says Kim, turning her coffee cup round and round in her saucer.
"Well, yeah, I mean, from the minute I saw that sign that said, 'Dig here,' my curiosity was piqued. I don't mean to sound mercenary, but I write detective novels, so I'm kind of hardwired to pick up on things like that, you know. And then when Carrie-Anne told me about people going missing..."
"Carrie-Anne? Carrie-Anne Mulligan?"
"Yes."
She pauses, realising that she's just betrayed Carrie-Anne's confidence. "It was probably a little indiscreet of her, but when I mentioned I wrote detective novels, she said that there'd been a couple of police searches in those woods last summer. So I wondered if the sign I'd seen near the woods had anything to do with Tallulah. And then, well, you know the rest. But there is one thing. An odd thing." Kim glances at her and stops turning her cup. "You know that strange implement they found in the flower bed outside the accommodation block?" Kim nods. "I mean, I could be wrong, but the cardboard sign, it doesn't look to me as if Carrie-Anne's daughter would have been able to see it from the edge of her own terrace. I can't help thinking that she was in somebody else's room when she saw it."
"Like who?"
"Like Liam Bailey, maybe?" She shows her the photo of Liam and Lexi in the garden at the Ducks.
"Look,"
she says. "They're friends. I didn't realise. So maybe she was in his apartment, not hers, when she saw it. I just think..." She pauses because really, she doesn't know what she thinks.
"I just thought maybe if you were talking to the detective, maybe you could mention it to him. Just in case they haven't thought of it themselves, which I'm sure they have. I mean, they must have."
Kim nods again. Then she says,
"Why is someone doing this to me?"
Sophie flinches at the rawness of her voice.
"Why is someone not telling me what they know? Why are they being so cruel? And this girl, this Mimi, she's obviously been talking to someone in the village. It's the only way she could possibly have known about what's been happening here. So it must be the person who's been leaving the clues, and it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense that half the people who were there that night have disappeared into thin air, and the other half are still here and for some unknown reason are leading us all up the fucking garden path."
Her voice has grown louder, and the woman behind the bar looks across at them.
"You okay, Kim?"
she calls. Kim nods and sighs.
"I'm fine,"
she says.
"I'm fine."
She takes her phone and puts it into her handbag.
"I'll talk to Dom about the video, see what else he's got to tell me."
"Dom?"
"The detective."
"Ah," Sophie smiles. "The real detective." Kim smiles too.
"Yeah, the real detective."
Then she says,
"And I'm sorry, I don't really read. In fact, I haven't read a book since I was about 19, since before Tallulah was born. Otherwise, I'd ask what your books are called, but I wouldn't have heard of them anyway."
Sophie thinks briefly of telling Kim about the passage in her own book that someone seems to be copycatting. The book that Liam Bailey brought into her home yesterday, tapping its spine against the palm of his hand in a way that now feels vaguely sinister. But she decides against it. The revelation will take away from her impartiality, the impartiality she feels that is the key to Kim trusting her.
"No," says Sophie with a reassuring smile. "No, probably not."
Chapter 41, May 2017. Scarlett is heading from the art block towards Tallulah. She has a small portfolio clutched against her chest, and she looks like she's on a mission. Tallulah turns and jumps into a shadow, but it's too late. Scarlet's seen her. She strides towards her, grabs her by her arm, and pulls her gently onto a pathway behind the art block.
Well?
Scarlet asks, her eyes wide with desperation.
Did you do it? Did you finish it? What happened? Are you okay?
Tallulah lowers her gaze towards her feet. It's dank and damp behind the block. The tarmacked path is green with mildew and moss.
I'm fine,
she says.
I'm working on it. I know what I'm doing.
Scarlet peers down at her in disbelief.
Oh, God,
she says.
You chickened out, didn't you? Fuck, Tallulah, what happened?
I don't know. I mean, I told him I wanted to split up. I told him I didn't want to live with him anymore. Didn't want to move in with him. Didn't want to be with him. And I thought he was going to shout, scream, you know. But he didn't.
She shudders at the memory.
He just picked the baby up and held him like this, right next to his face, and said he wasn't going fucking anywhere. And it felt like a threat, you know? Like he'd hurt Noah if I made him leave. And so I just left it. You know, I didn't want to push him. And then last night,
she draws in her breath.
I was meant to be going to the pub, and he started crying, saying how scared he'd been that Noah wasn't his and how much he loves him. And so I didn't go to the pub. I stayed in and we just talked all night, you know. We had some wine and we just talked. Like we haven't talked for so long. And I told him how I feel and how I don't want to be in a couple with him anymore, but that I do want to raise Noah with him, and he seemed to take it really well.
So he's moving out.
Tallulah shifts awkwardly from one foot to the other.
No. Well, not yet, anyway. He says he's going to buy a flat, even if we don't live there, so he's got somewhere to have Noah on his own, you know? Because he really doesn't want to move back in with his mum, and to be fair, I don't blame him because his mum's not very nice and his dad's a total creep. So I said he can stay, just until he's got a place of his own.
Stay? In your bed?
Well, yeah, but it's fine. We'll just put a cushion down the middle. You know, it's no big deal. I mean, we've been together since we were 14, since we were like kids, and it won't be for long. He's already saved up so much money. It shouldn't be more than a few weeks.
And what about your Wednesday afternoons?
Will you still be, you know?
No,
says Tallulah defiantly.
No, that's not going to happen anymore. Purely platonic, purely co-parents. Just for a few more weeks. And then he'll go.
And then?
Tallulah looks at her questioningly.
Then what? When he's gone, will you and me,
you know, can we?
Tallulah sighs.
I can't just jump into something and you're still straight, or whatever it is that you are, still mucking about with boys. I've got a baby to think about, and if I was going to get into something with you, it would have to be serious, and I don't think you're capable of that. I really don't.
She sees Scarlet flinch at the words, but then rally.
You're right, she says. You are. I'm a fucking moron. I've always been a moron. But I can change.
She says this in a hammy, put-on voice, which makes Tallulah smile. But then she grows serious and puts her hand against Tallulah's arm.
I'm a knob, Lules. But I can try. Seriously. I mean, I'm nearly 20. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm not a child. Will you give me another chance? Please.
Tallulah pulls away from her touch at the sound of voices nearing the top of the path. When the voices pass, she turns back to Scarlet.
I don't know,
she says.
I can't think straight. I just need to deal with Zach for now. I need to get him out of my house and get my life back, and then I can get my head sorted. But I can't do this right now. I really can't. I'm sorry.
Scarlet nods.
Sure,
she says.
I get it. It's fair.
But I'm going to wait for you. I swear. I'm going to be like a nun for you. I'm going to be like 10 nuns for you. Seriously, Lules. Just don't let him manipulate you, okay? Don't let him trick you into staying with him. Because I reckon he totally will.
He won't. I swear, I can tell. He means it. Scarlett narrows her eyes at Tallulah and gazes at her skeptically.
I swear.
Scarlett nods, just once, brushes Tallulah's cheek with the fingertips of her right hand, and then turns and leaves her standing there, her touch on Tallulah's skin leaving behind a flush of nameless dread. Chapter 42, September 2018.
Hi, Dom, it's me, says Kim. I wondered if you'd had a chance to look at the link I sent you, to that girl on YouTube.
No, he says. Not yet. I'm really sorry. I'll look at it now and get back to you. But we've had some good movement. We've finally tracked down Martin Jacks, Scarlett's father. Or at least we've got hold of his PA, who keeps telling us that he'll get back to us, but he's a bit tied up in Abu Dhabi. We're still trying to trace the rest of the family. They were in Guernsey, but apparently nobody's seen them for a couple of weeks. But please, believe me, Kim. We're doing everything we can. Things are happening. Painfully slowly in some cases, I'll grant you that. But it just takes so long to get anything done these days, with all the government cuts, and when it's a cold case, it takes even longer.
When the bones are already icy cold, Kim thinks. When the blood is dried hard. When it's too late to save anyone.
I'm pushing against it all as hard as I can for you, Kim. It's all I'm doing. It's all I'm thinking about, I swear.
She hears a crack of emotion in his voice and feels it reverberate into her own psyche. She swallows it down and says,
Yes, of course, Dom. I know you are. I know you are. I'm just so...
Yes, says Dom. Yes, I know.
There's a heat contained within their exchange, created from the energy of desperation and loss and frustration and misguided hope, but also from the intimacy that's built up between the two of them as everything else has peeled away, from them and the thing that unites them. She sighs.
Thank you, Dom. Thank you for everything you're doing.
It's my pleasure, Kim. Always.
He ends the call and Kim stands for a moment, staring through the kitchen window at the trees at the end of her garden. She thinks of the skinny, sad girl talking to a camera in a room somewhere. A girl who knows something about the things that are currently taking place at Maypole House. And then, clear as though it was actually happening, she remembers that hot June afternoon, walking up to Dark Place, the trickle of sweat down her back, Ryan rocking Noah in his pushchair, the drops of pool water on Scarlett's shoulder coalescing and collapsing, the handsome son with the beers in his hand, the brittle mother in the white sundress, the way Scarlett had been unable to make eye contact, but then the way she'd said her daughter's name, Lula. In every other respect, she'd been so cold and distant. But when she said Tallulah's name, her voice sounded thick and heavy, as though the name meant something to her. She thinks about the night that Tallulah said she'd spent at Chloe's because Chloe was feeling suicidal, and wonders again where she'd been. She thinks of all those Sunday mornings when Zach was playing football and Tallulah took her bike and went for a ride in the countryside. She thinks of how she would return with a glow and a flush, looking engorged with secrets. She even remembers asking Tallulah once, Where do you go when you go for your bike rides? You always look like you've just been somewhere magical when you get back. And Tallulah had smiled and said,
Just around the back lanes, you know, where there's no traffic. It's gorgeous.
And do you stop? She'd asked. Stop and explore?
Yes,
she'd replied, busying herself with removing Noah's bib.
I stop and explore.
And there'd been a richness in her tone, the same richness that she'd heard in Scarlett's voice when she said Tallulah's name. And as she thinks this, another memory jumps to the forefront of her mind, of Scarlett in her towel, the pool water falling in rivulets from her wet hair, and her fingers clasping her narrow feet. And then, just for the briefest of moments, a snatched view of a small tattoo just below her ankle, the letters TM, and Kim noticing it on some subliminal level.
but also not noticing it because, really, why would this girl she'd never heard of before have her daughter's initials tattooed on her foot? And the hand that slipped down once again to cover the marks, and Kim had both seen it and not seen it, but it was there all along, like a sunspot. She grabs her phone and finds Sophie's number in her WhatsApp. She types her a message incredibly quickly. "It's me, Kim. Are you busy? Can I talk to you about something?" Immediately there comes a reply. "Not busy at all. I can talk now." Chapter 43, June 2017. For a few days after the night that Tallulah and Zach drink wine and talk, everything is fine between them. Zach is chilled and relaxed. He cooks dinner for them. He bathes Noah and keeps him entertained. He sits quietly at his spreadsheets playing around with his finances without constantly asking Tallulah to get involved. He gives Tallulah space to study and just to be. At night, they sleep in her bed with the baby between them, and he makes no attempt to be physically affectionate with her. He quietly gets ready for work every morning and quietly returns every night, and all is well. Then, at the beginning of June, just after Noah's first birthday, Scarlett messages Tallulah to ask her to wait for her after college so that they can get the bus home together. They meet up on the pavement just outside college. Scarlett is halfway through her end-of-year exams. She's been doing a still life for 2 whole days. "An artichoke and a bone," she says as they stride together towards the bus stop. "Seriously, I've spent 2 days staring at an artichoke and a bone."
"What do they symbolise?"
"Like nothing, just stuff I picked up as I left the house. The bone is Toby's. He's not impressed. But they look quite cool. I put them on black velvet and they look kind of, you know, Dutch mastery."
"When's your last exam?"
"Wednesday next week. Then I have to hand in my portfolio on Thursday, and then it'll be Friday, and I'm going to the pub to get absolutely shit-faced."
"Who are you going with?"
"The usuals, and maybe Liam." She looks at Tallulah sideways to gauge her response. But Tallulah just shrugs and says,
"Whatever, it's not my business."
"No, but seriously, just as friends, because we are just good friends. Honestly, what happened that night?
It was just stupid.
Just a stupid, stupid thing. Because I'm a stupid, stupid person."
"Scott, it's fine. You don't need to explain."
"Yeah, but I do need to explain. I need to explain it to myself, if anything. I've always just been such a do-it-first, think-about-it-later kind of person. I never think through the consequences of anything I do. Look." She draws in her breath and turns hard to face her. "I know you think I've had this charmed life, that nothing bad has ever happened to me. But something bad has happened to me. Something really bad. Not long after you and me first met. It's why I dropped out of college. It's why I couldn't face anyone for so long." Tallulah glances at her quizzically and waits for her to continue. Scarlett sighs and says, "Come to the pub with me. When we get off the bus, I'll tell you everything." They slide into a quiet corner of the Swan and Ducks with a Diet Coke for Tallulah and a hot chocolate with a shot of rum on the side for Scarlett. The pub is virtually empty at this time of the day, the summer sun bright through the windows. A man sits at the bar with a beagle spread out at his feet, and Scarlett points at the dog and says, as she does about every dog she ever sees, "That's a good dog."
"Okay then," says Tallulah. "I'm ready to hear your dark confession."
Scarlett wriggles slightly.
"I can't believe I'm going to tell you this. You're going to hate me even more than you already do."
"I don't hate you."
"Whatever. Just promise me you will never, ever tell another soul what I'm about to tell you. Not ever."
"I swear."
"Seriously, never."
"Never."
Scarlett blinks slowly and composes herself.
Early last summer, she begins. At the start of the holidays, I was kind of alone a lot. Liam had gone back to his farm. Mum was back and forth from London. Everyone was away, and I was really bored and really lonely. I mean, really, really lonely. And one day, I went into school. She points at the maypole across the common, just to go and say hi to Lexi Mulligan, because I was so desperate for someone to talk to. I took the dog, and we went through the woods. It was a really stunning day. I was wearing, like, a slip dress and boots, and I was sweating, hot even in the shade of the trees. And then I realised there was a man coming the other way, and I felt a bit scared, a bit like I wished I had a fucking Rottweiler instead of Lord Drool-a-Lot, and that I was wearing more clothes. But then he got a bit closer, and I realised I recognised him. He was familiar, and then I saw his dog, and I knew that it was Mr. Croft. Mr. Croft? Married to Jacinta Croft? The head teacher? You know, tiny weeny woman, looks like a Polly Pocket on HRT. Tallulah shakes her head. She's never paid any attention to anything that happens at Maypole House. You'd recognise her if you saw her. Anyway, she's married to Guy. He's kind of tall and bald and quiet. He's a web designer, works from home. Looks after their kid. Keeps himself to himself, and I swear, I'd never even noticed him properly before that day. I only recognised him by his dog. A black lab, Nelson. Literally just the loveliest dog ever. Tallulah glances at the time on her phone from the corner of her eye. It's nearly 4. She'd normally be home about 4:15. She can feel her window of freedom shrinking as Scarlett tells her about a dog called Nelson. Anyway, so of course, Toby dragged me over to say hello to Nelson, and while Toby and Nelson were chatting, me and Mr. Croft started chatting too, and he told me he was home alone, that Jacinta was at their London house with their son for a few weeks. He was going to join them later in the summer, that he had a project to finish, yada, yada, yada. And as he was talking, I could see his eyes kept going to my boobs, and I don't know why, because it should have been as creepy as fuck. But for some reason, it just really turned me on. Tallulah bangs her glass of Coke down on the table and coughs as the liquid hits the back of her throat. Oh my God! She gasps. Please stop, I don't want to hear any more. I know, I'm sorry, it's gross, but bear with me, it gets worse. Oh Christ, Scarlett, I'm not sure I can. So yes, we were chatting about really boring shit, and I was thinking, I want to fuck you. And I was probably ovulating or something, I don't know. But I looked at him and I thought, now, do it to me now. And Tallulah puts a hand between them and closes her eyes. Honestly, I can't. Please, says Scarlett, I have to purge. This is important. Tallulah sighs again. Go on then. I could tell he could feel it too. And seriously, he's like in his 40s and bald and not even that good looking. And I told him I was walking up to the school and he said he'd walk with me and we were chatting and the sexual tension was building. And then we came out of the back of the woods and we were facing the back door of his cottage in the grounds and he said, come in for a glass of water. And that was that. Tallulah throws her an appalled look. She has no idea how to respond. Scarlett continues. We spent the whole of that month fucking, literally. That was all I did for a month. Walk the dog through the woods, knock on the back door of Mrs. Croft's house. He'd let me in, we'd fuck, I'd leave. And it was amazing. Kind of seedy, but amazing. It's like, you know, sex is such a weird, stupid thing when you think about it. About the mechanics of it. About what a man does and what a woman does and what it's for. If you think about it for too long, you'd never want to do it again because it's gross. But that was the thing. Neither of us was thinking. We were just bored and lonely and horny. I can't explain it any other way. When I look back on it, I don't even get it. I don't know what I was thinking. It was like this warped, twisted holiday romance. And anyway, after a few weeks, he went up to London and I went off sailing with Rex and my mum. And then it was September and Liam came back to college and I started at Manton. And me and Guy both agreed to quit it and get on with our lives. And for a while it was fine. I didn't see him around and he didn't get in contact. But then, kind of around the time I first met you that day on the bus, he was in the co-op and I was in the co-op. And our eyes met and we made some kind of inane small talk and I scuttled off feeling really confused. Next thing, he sent me a fucking dick pic. Tallulah gasps again and covers her mouth with her hands.
No,
she whispers through her fingers. Yes. And I just immediately deleted it and typed back, no, in caps lock. And then it went quiet again for a while. And then one night, I guess he must have been drunk, he started bombarding me with text messages and dick pics and declarations of love and hate and everything in between. He said Mrs. Croft was never at home and his son had gone to boarding school and he missed me and he couldn't live without me. And I just deleted everything and stopped replying. And then the night of the Manton Christmas party, after I met you, I just really, really couldn't think straight anymore. You'd just blown my mind and my inbox was full of all this crazy shit from Mr. Croft and I just didn't want to go anywhere near Maypole House or the village. I just wanted to stay away from everyone and everything. So I finished with Liam a couple of days later. And then it was Christmas, and I just hunkered down with my family, kept my head down. I was going to come back to college in January, fresh start, clear head. But then one day, in that weird bit between Christmas and New Year, I took Toby out into the woods, and I had my AirPods in. It was kind of early afternoon, starting to get dark, darker still in the woods, and I was close to my house, so I thought it was safe. And then suddenly, she pauses and her gaze drops to the table. Someone came up behind me and put their hand over my mouth, like this, and pulled me back. And I nearly died of a fucking heart attack. And it was him, of course. It was Mr. Croft, Guy. And he was smiling at me, like it was all a cute joke. He pointed at my AirPods to take them out, tried to make out it was normal to put your hand over a teenage girl's mouth in the woods in the dark. So I took them out and said, "What the fuck?" And he said, "I'm leaving her." I said, "What?" He said, "I'm leaving Jacinta. There's nothing left between us. It's over. I've got a flat. Come with me." I kind of laughed and said, "I'm 18 years old. I'm a student. I live with my mum. I can't go anywhere with anyone." I might have sounded a bit flippant. I don't know. But seriously, it was just nuts. And then he started crying, and Toby started whining because he always whines when people cry. And that sort of made me laugh because, fuck's sake, a grown man crying and a St. Bernard dog whining is funny. And then he threw me this look that said, "Shut up." And he started kissing me. And it was kind of rough and desperate. And I just went into this sort of trance. I can't explain it. I went into a trance and just did the movements. Just did the movements. Like a pre-programmed doll. I just thought, let it happen. Just let it happen. I think in a way that I was just stopping it from being rape because I couldn't fucking deal with it being rape. So I just turned it into sex in my head and afterwards. She stops and pulls in her breath. Tallulah can hear tears catching at the back of her throat. Afterwards, he just sort of stared at me. Breathlessly, he said. I'm going now. And I just nodded and he went. And I could tell he was really freaked out because we'd just done this weird thing that was so grey, you know, so ambiguous, impossible to know where the consent was in it or even if there had been any consent. And he knew and I knew it, but neither of us acknowledged it. And then he just went. And I never saw him again.
Tallulah doesn't know what to say.
God, that's horrible. Are you okay?
Scarlett stirs her hot chocolate and shrugs.
I don't know. I felt like raw. Exposed after. I didn't know who I was or what I was. I kept thinking I'd wake up the next morning and I'd feel normal. But I never did. I couldn't tell my mum. I couldn't tell anyone. I finally snapped one day, thought I was having a nervous breakdown, called Liam, begged him to come over. I was going to tell him everything, but then he got there, and all I wanted to do was just climb into his arms and hold on to him and let him rock me. But every time I closed my eyes, I felt Guy's hand over my mouth. I felt him on me. Every time I looked at Toby, I'd think, you were there? You were a witness? What did you see? What did you think? Did he rape me? Am I a victim? Or am I a whore?
Scarlett rubs tears from her face with the backs of her hands. She sighs and drops the teaspoon, picks up her hot chocolate and drinks it. Tallulah puts her hand against her arm and says,
that sounds like a nightmare.
Scarlett nods forcefully.
Yes,
she says.
Yes, that's exactly it. Exactly. The setting, the dusk, the unexpectedness of it, the way he disappeared afterwards. No one ever talked about him. I never heard his name mentioned. Like, maybe he'd never really existed. Maybe he was just a figment of my imagination. It had that quality of a really unsettling dream. One of those ones that haunts you for days afterwards. And I was lost. Just totally lost. Until that moment a few weeks later, when the doorbell rang on a Sunday morning and there you were. Tallulah from the bus. Come to save me.
She stops talking then, and Tallulah glances at her curiously. It feels, strangely, as though she has something else to share with her, as if she hasn't quite finished offloading.
And that was that?
Scarlett nods forcefully.
Yes,
she says.
And that was that.
It's nearly 4:30 when Tallulah leaves the pub. She feels warped and out of sorts. She glances at her phone briefly to check that nobody's been trying to get hold of her, and then she puts it in her jeans pocket and starts across the common. As she does so, she glances across at Maypole House. Somewhere in there, she ponders, is Jacinta Croft, the woman whose husband Scarlett had a tawdry affair with last summer. Somewhere in there is Liam Bailey, the man Scarlett cheated on with the head teacher's husband. And here she is, Tallulah Murray, a local teenage mum having her first gay love affair. And over there, she glances at her own home, is a boy called Zach Alistair, who is the father of her child, and somewhere else is her own father, who loves his mother more than he loves his wife and children. And over there, she glances at the road out of the village, are Megs and Simon Alistair, parents to 5 children, none of whom they know how to love properly. And over there, beyond the village, are the woods, the shadowy half-world where Scarlett may or may not have been raped by a man old enough to be her father. And there are no answers to anything, anywhere, no clear paths through. The only thing, she ponders as she walks, the only thing that is clear and plain and simple is Noah. She picks up her pace as she gets closer to home, desperate to hold him in her arms. As she nears the cul-de-sac, she hears the familiar rumble of the bus pulling up at the stop outside the maypole. The doors hiss open, and she sees a familiar shape climb off the bus and turn left. It's Zack. He's late home from work. She thought he'd be back by now. That explains why she hasn't had any messages or missed calls from him. She picks up her pace and catches up with him. As he turns and looks at her, his face contorts slightly, and she sees him stuff something into the pocket of his jacket, a small bag. She pretends not to have noticed and smiles as she approaches him. He seems so thrown by her having almost caught him with something that he didn't want her to see that he has not noticed she is returning home late and from the wrong direction.
"You're back late," she says.
"Yeah, I went into town after work. Needed a new phone charger." They pause to cross the road to let a car pass by. It's Kerri-Anne Mulligan, the matron from Maypole. She knows everyone, and everyone knows her. She puts her hand up and waves at them from the window. They wave back. As they enter the house, Zack takes off his jacket, hangs it from a hook, and goes straight through to the living room where she can hear him cooing at Noah. She quickly puts her hand inside the pocket of Zack's coat and pulls out the bag. It's a dark green plastic carrier bag with the words Mason and Son Fine Jewelry printed on it. She peers inside and sees a small black box with the same logo printed on it in gold. She's about to open the box when she feels someone appear in the hallway. She stuffs the bag back in the pocket and looks up. It's her mum.
"Are you okay, baby? You're late back."
She forces a smile.
"I'm fine,"
she says.
"Exam started late, overran a bit."
She smiles again and moves away from Zack's jacket, which now feels as though it is sending out radioactive particles that could burn her flesh, and heads into the living room where Noah is in Zack's arms and Zack is kissing his fingers and blowing raspberries into the palm of his hand. And even though she didn't open the box, she knows what's in it, and she feels for a moment like she can't breathe. Like someone is sitting on her chest because she knows what it means and she knows that Zack will never ever leave her and that he is just pretending to be making plans to go. He's playing a game with her, she realises, keeping her sweet, keeping her on side, biding his time. Noah's face opens up into a huge gappy smile when he sees Tallulah and he puts his arms out to her. She grabs him from Zack and tries not to flinch when Zack encircles all three of them inside his arms. Trying to make a family of them. Trying to make them one. Chapter 44. September 2018. The doorbell to Sophie's cottage rings. It's an old-fashioned doorbell. The type you don't hear very often in these days of apps and electric chimes. It's incredibly loud, and it makes Sophie jump out of her skin every time she hears it. Kim is standing at the front door.
"Sorry," says Sophie, clutching her heart as she opens the door. "That bell always makes me jump. Sorry, come in."
Kim follows Sophie into the kitchen and watches her fill the kettle at the tap.
"I just spoke to Dom," she says. "He still hasn't looked at the clip of the Amelia girl. It's so frustrating. I know the police are doing everything they can, but the more time passes, the slower things seem to move. I just thought... You seem to have a different view on things. I mean, you found that video of Mimi. And being a detective novelist..."
She smiles wryly.
"I don't know. There are just some bits and pieces that I've been trying to put together in my head. Flashes of stuff."
"Like what?"
"Oh, like, you know, the day after they went missing, I went to talk to Tallulah's college friend. Her name's Chloe. She lives just over there on the road out of the village. Church Lane. I always thought she and Tallulah were really close friends. There was one night when Tallulah even slept over with her because she thought Chloe was feeling suicidal. So she was obviously the first person I'd think of to ask. Tallulah didn't have many friends, you know. She was so wrapped up with Noah and with Zack too, to a certain extent. Anyway, I spoke to Chloe and she said not only was she and Tallulah not really friends anymore, she also told me that Tallulah had never spent the night at her house and that Tallulah had gone off with Scarlett Jacques at the Christmas party the year before. Yet Scarlett was so adamant that she and Tallulah hadn't really known each other before that night. And then, just now, just before I messaged you, I remembered something. something that didn't really hit me at the time. I'd been to see the Jacques family the day before, and Scarlett had just got out of the pool, and she was sitting on a towel, and I noticed just here. Kim points at the side of her foot. She had a tattoo, and it was very clearly the initials T.M. Sophie looks at Kim questioningly. T.M. Tallulah Murray. And now, you know, my head is spinning, replaying things, looking at everything from a different angle, because what if Tallulah and Scarlett were, you know, having an affair? And what if Zach had found out? And what if it all came out that night at Scarlett's house? And what if... She stops. Anyway, things are happening. I know things are happening. The lever they found in the flower bed, I'm certain it's got something to do with it. I know they're trying to trace the Jacques family, and I know lots and lots of things are happening, but it just feels like we're getting so close now and I can't push Dom any harder, and I just really need someone to bounce off. There isn't really anyone else. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've got friends, I've got my son, but I haven't really got anyone else who might want to get sucked up into all of this with me. And I just wondered how you'd feel about maybe teaming up with me. I know that might sound a bit weird. No, Sophie interjects forcefully. No, it doesn't sound weird. Not at all, it sounds great. To be honest, I've been wanting to help you, but I didn't want you to think I was being morbid or ghoulish. Kim smiles. I would love for you to help me, I really would. And I thought it seems like you're quite up on social media, that kind of thing. And maybe we could see what else we could find. Maybe see if we can't get to the Jacques family before the police do. Sophie nods. Yes, she says, her heart beginning to race slightly with excitement. Yes. She goes to the front hallway and grabs her laptop, brings it to the kitchen table and opens it wide. Let's find these people. Kim and Sophie sit side by side at the kitchen table, Sophie poised in front of the laptop. They look at Mimi's video again on YouTube and scroll down to see if there are any new messages in the comments section. There are three. They scan them quickly. The last one chills them. It's from someone called Cherry, and it says simply, "Take this down now." Chapter 45, June 2017. Small gestures of physical affection start to proliferate over the next couple of days. Zach tucks a strand of her hair behind her ear for her, runs his fingers across the back of her neck, slings an arm across the baby in bed at night that somehow encompasses Tallulah also. The gestures aren't sexual, and they are so fleeting that she barely has time to register them and complain. She sees her mother's face sometimes when she catches a glimpse of one of these encounters, the flash of a warm smile, no doubt thinking how lucky Tallulah is to have such a loving, attentive man in her life. But the gestures make Tallulah's flesh crawl. She wants to slap his hand away, hiss at him to fuck off. And all the while, the memory of the little black box in his jacket pocket pulses through her consciousness, like an insistent, low-level alarm going off somewhere in the distance. She can feel it in the air, the build-up to it. Every time Zach clears his throat or calls her name, she catches her breath, terrified that he is about to propose to her. And then, one sunny June afternoon, he glances up at her from where he's lying on the bed with his laptop and he says, "You know, I've been thinking. I've been too obsessed with this flat, too obsessed with saving up. I'm thinking I might like to splash a bit of cash." He smiles at her. His tone is light and playful. "How about a night at the pub? You and me, my treat."
"Well," she begins carefully, "I can't really at the moment. I've still got so much work to do for my exams."
He sits upright, eyes her eagerly.
"When's your last exam?"
She shrugs.
"Friday next week."
"Right then," he says. "That Friday, we're going to the pub. I'll talk to your mum about sitting with Noah, and I'll book us a table."
Her heart sinks. This is it.
"Oh,"
she says lightly.
"Honestly, don't waste your money on me. I'll be shattered that night. I'll be shit company. Why don't you go with your mates?"
He shakes his head.
No way. I'm not paying for my mates to get wankered. No, just you and me. It's a date.
Again.